Hey boo, we're continuing chapter 5 of Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban. Remember, they were still on the train and sort of chilling, talking about things with Lupin sitting there asleep. The rain thickened as the train sped yet farther north. The windows were now a solid shimmering gray, which gradually darkened until lanterns flickered into life all along the corridors and over the luggage racks. The train rattled. The rain hammered. The wind soared, but still, Professor Lupin slept. "We must be nearly there. Oh, man. We must be nearly there," said Ron, leaning forward to look past Professor Lupin at the now completely black window. The words had hardly left him when the train started to slow down. "Great," said Ron, getting up and walking carefully past Professor Lupin to try to see outside. "I'm starving. I want to get to the feast." "We can't be there yet," said Hermione, checking her watch. "So why are we stopping?" The train was getting slower and slower. As the noise of the pistons fell away, the wind and rain sounded louder than ever against the windows. Harry, who was nearest the door, got up to look into the corridor. All along the carriage, heads were sticking curiously out of their compartments. The train came to a stop with a jolt, and distant thuds and bangs told them that luggage had fallen off the racks. Then, without warning, all the lamps went out, and they were plunged into total darkness. "What's going on?" said Ron's voice behind Harry. "Ouch!" said Hermione. "Ron, that was my foot!" Harry felt his way back to his seat. "Do you think we've broken down?" "Do know." There was a squeaking sound, and Harry saw the dim black outline of Ron, wiping a patch clean on the window and peering out. "There's something moving out there," said Ron. "I think people are coming aboard." The compartment door suddenly opened, and someone fell painfully over Harry's legs.
"Sorry, do you know what's going on? Oh, sorry."
"Hello, Neville," said Harry, feeling around in the dark and pulling Neville up by his cloak.
"Harry, is that you? What's happening?"
"No idea. Sit down." There was a loud hissing and a yelp of pain. Neville had tried to sit on Crookshanks. "I'm going to ask the driver what's going on," came Hermione's voice. Harry felt her pass, heard the door slide open again, and then a thud and two loud squeals of pain. "Who's that? Who's that? Ginny? Hermione? What are you doing?" "I was looking for Ron." "Come and sit down." "Not here," said Harry hurriedly. "I'm here." "Ouch," said Neville. "Quiet," said a hoarse voice suddenly. Professor Lupin appeared to have woken up at last. Harry could hear movements in his corner. None of them spoke. There was a soft crackling noise, and the shivering light filled the compartment. Professor Lupin appeared to be holding a handful of flames. They illuminated his tired gray face, but his eyes looked alert and wary. "Stay where you are," he said in the same hoarse voice, and he slowly got to his feet with his handful of fire held out in front of him. But the door slid slowly open before Lupin could reach it. Standing in the doorway, illuminated by the shivering flames in Lupin's hand, was a cloaked figure that towered to the ceiling. Its face was completely hidden behind its hood. Harry's eyes darted downward, and what he saw made his stomach contract. There was a hand protruding from the cloak, and it was glistening, grayish, slimy-looking and scabbed, like something dead that had decayed in water. But it was visible only for a second. As though the creature beneath the cloak sensed Harry's gaze, the hand was suddenly withdrawn into the folds of its black cloak. And then the thing beneath the hood, whatever it was, drew a long, slow, rattling breath, as though it were trying to suck something more than air from its surroundings. An intense cold swept over all of them. Harry felt his own breath catch in his chest. The cold went deeper than his skin. It was inside his chest. It was inside his very heart. Harry's eyes rolled up into his head. He couldn't see. He was drowning in cold. There was a rushing in his ears, as though of water. He was being dragged downward, the roaring growing louder. And then, from far away, he heard screaming, terrible, terrified, pleading screams. He wanted to help whoever it was. He tried to move his arms, but couldn't. A thick white fog was swirling around him, inside him. "Harry, Harry, are you all right?" Someone was slapping his face. "What?" Harry opened his eyes. There were lanterns above him, and the floor was shaking. The Hogwarts Express was moving again, and the lights had come back on. He seemed to have slid out of his seat onto the floor. Ron and Hermione were kneeling next to him, and above them he could see Neville and Professor Lupin watching. Harry felt very sick. When he put his hand to push his glasses back on, he felt cold sweat on his face. Ron and Hermione heaved him back into his seat. "Are you okay?" Ron asked nervously. "Yeah," said Harry, looking quickly at the door. The hooded creature had vanished. "What happened? Where's that thing? Who screamed?" "No one screamed," said Ron, more nervously still. Harry looked around the bright compartment. Ginny and Neville looked back at him, both very pale. "But I heard screaming." A loud snap made them all jump. Professor Lupin was breaking an enormous slab of chocolate into pieces. "Here," he said to Harry, handing him a particularly large piece. "Eat it. It'll help." Harry took the chocolate, but didn't eat it. "What was that thing?" he asked Lupin. "A Dementor," said Lupin, who was now giving chocolate to everyone else. "One of the Dementors of Azkaban." Everyone stared at him. Professor Lupin crumpled up the empty chocolate wrapper and put it in his pocket. "Eat it," he repeated. "It'll help. I need to speak to the driver. Excuse me." He strolled past Harry and disappeared into the corridor. "Are you sure you're okay, Harry?" said Hermione, watching Harry anxiously. "I don't get it. What happened?" said Harry, wiping more sweat off his face. "Well, that thing, the Dementor, stood there and looked around. I mean, I think it did. I couldn't see its face. And you... I thought you were having a fit or something," said Ron, who still looked scared. "You went sort of rigid and fell out of your seat and started twitching. And Professor Lupin stepped over you and walked toward the Dementor and pulled out his wand," said Hermione. "And he said, 'None of us is hiding Sirius Black under our cloaks. Go.' But the Dementor didn't move, so Lupin muttered something, and a silvery thing shot out of his wand at it. And it turned around and sort of glided away." "It was horrible," said Neville, in a higher voice than usual. "Do you feel how cold it got when it came in?" "I felt weird," said Ron, shifting his shoulders uncomfortably. "Like I'd never be cheerful again." Ginny, who was huddled in a corner, looking nearly as bad as Harry, gave a soft sob. Hermione went over and put a comforting arm around her. "But didn't any of you fall off your seats?" Harry asked awkwardly. "No," said Ron, looking anxiously at Harry again. Ginny was shaking like mad, though. Harry didn't understand. He felt weak and shivery, as though he were recovering from a bad bout of flu. He also felt the beginnings of shame. Why had he gone to pieces like that when no one else had? Professor Lupin had come back in. He paused as he entered, looking around, and said with a small smile, "I haven't poisoned that chocolate, you know." Harry took a bite and, to his great surprise, felt warmth spread suddenly to the tips of his fingers and toes. "We'll be at Hogwarts in 10 minutes, said Professor Lupin. "Are you all right, Harry?" Harry didn't ask how Professor Lupin knew his name. "Fine," he muttered, embarrassed. They didn't talk much during the remainder of the journey. At long last, the train stopped at Hogsmeade Station, and there was a great scramble to get outside. Owls hooted, cats meowed, and Neville's pet toad croaked loudly from under his hat. It was freezing on the tiny platform. Rain was driving down in icy sheets.
"First year's this way," called a familiar voice.
Harry, Ron, and Hermione turned and saw the gigantic outline of Hagrid at the other end of the platform, beckoning the terrified-looking new students forward for their traditional journey across the lake.
All right, you three,
Harry yelled over the heads of the crowd. They waved at him, but he had no chance to speak. Because the mass of people around them was shunting them away from the platform. Harry, Ron, and Hermione followed the rest of the school along the platform and out onto a rough mud track, where at least 100 stagecoaches awaited the remaining students, and each pulled, Harry could only assume, by an invisible horse, because when they climbed inside and shut the door, the coach set off all by itself, bumping and swaying in procession. The coach smelled faintly of mold and straw. Harry felt better since the chocolate, but still weak. Ron and Hermione kept looking at him sideways, as though he frightened he might collapse again. As the carriage trundled toward a pair of magnificent wrought iron gates, flanked with stone columns toppled with winged boars, Harry saw two more towering hooded dementors standing guard on either side. A wave of cold sickness threatened to engulf him again. He leaned back into the lumpy seats and closed his eyes until they had passed the gates. The carriage picked up speed on the long, sloping drive up to the castle. Hermione was leaning out the tiny window, watching the many turrets and towers draw nearer. At last, the carriage swayed to a halt, and Hermione and Ron got out. As Harry stepped down, a drawling, delighted voice sounded in his ear. "You fainted, Potter. Is Longbottom telling the truth? You actually fainted?" Malfoy elbowed past Hermione to block Harry's way up to the stone steps of the castle, his face gleeful and his pale eyes glinting maliciously.
"Shove off, Malfoy," said Ron, whose jaw was clenched. "Did you faint as well, Weasley?" said Malfoy loudly. "Did the scary old Dementor frighten you too, Weasley?"
"Is there a problem?" said a mild voice. Professor Lupin had just gotten out of the carriage. Malfoy gave Professor Lupin an insolent stare, which took in the patches of his robe, which took in the patches on his robe and the dilapidated suitcase. With a tiny hint of sarcasm in his voice, he said, "Oh no, Professor," and then he smirked at Crabbe and Goyle and led them up the stairs into the castle. Hermione prodded Ron in the back to make him hurry, and the three of them joined the crowd swarming up the steps, through the oak front doors, and into the cavernous entrance hall, which was lit with flaming torches and housed a magnificent marble staircase that led to the upper floors. You know, I've always wondered, why did Neville tell Malfoy that Harry fainted? I mean, that didn't have to happen, did it? That seems silly. He's supposed to be a loyal one, right? Gryffindors are loyal. Something like that. The door into the great hall stood open to the right. Harry followed the crowd toward it, but had barely glimpsed the enchanted ceiling, which was black and cloudy tonight, when a voice called,
"Potter, Granger, I want to see you both!"
Harry and Hermione turned around, surprised. Professor McGonagall, Transfiguration teacher and head of Gryffindor House, was calling over the heads of the crowd. She was a stern-looking witch who wore her hair in a tight bun. Her sharp eyes were framed with square spectacles. Harry fought his way over to her with a feeling of foreboding. Professor McGonagall had a way of making him feel as if he must have done something wrong.
"There's no need to look so worried. I just want a word in my office," she told them. "Move along there, Weasley."
Ron stared as Professor McGonagall ushered Harry and Hermione away from the chattering crowd. They accompanied her across the entrance hall, up the marble staircase, and along a corridor. Once they were in her office, a small room with a large welcoming fire, Professor McGonagall motioned Harry and Hermione to sit down. She settled herself behind her desk and abruptly said,
"Professor Lupin sent an owl ahead to say that you were taken ill on the train, Potter."
Before Harry could reply, there was a soft knock on the door, and Madame Pomfrey, the nurse, came bustling in. Harry felt himself going red in the face. It was bad enough that he'd passed out, or whatever he had done, without everyone making all this fuss.
"I'm fine," he said. "I don't need anything."
"Oh, it's you, is it?"
said Madame Pomfrey, ignoring this and bending down to stare closely at him. "I suppose you've been doing something dangerous again." It was a Dementor, Poppy, said Professor McGonagall. They exchanged a dark look, and Madame Pomfrey clucked disapprovingly.
Setting Dementors around a school,
she muttered, pushing Harry's hair back and feeling his forehead.
He won't be the last one who collapses. Yes, he's all clammy. Terrible things they are, and the effect they have on people who are already delicate.
I'm not delicate, said Harry crossly.
Oh, of course you're not,
said Madame Pomfrey absent-mindedly, now taking his pulse. What does he need, said Professor McGonagall crisply. Bed rest? Should he perhaps spend the night in a hospital wing?
I'm fine, said Harry, jumping up. The thought of what Draco Malfoy would say if he had to go to the hospital wing was torture.
Well, he should have some chocolate at the very least, said Madame Pomfrey,
who was now trying to peer into Harry's eyes. I've already had some, said Harry. Professor Lupin gave him some to me. He gave it to all of us.
Did he now? Said Madame Pomfrey approvingly. So we've finally got a defense against the dark arts teacher who knows his remedies?
Are you sure you feel all right, Potter? Said Professor McGonagall sharply.
Yes, said Harry.
Very well. Kindly wait outside while I have a quick word with Miss Granger about her course schedule, and then we can go down to the feast together.
Harry went back into the corridor with Madame Pomfrey, who left for the hospital wing, muttering to herself. He had to wait only for a few minutes, then Hermione emerged, looking very happy about something, followed by Professor McGonagall, and the three of them made their way down to the marble staircase and to the great hall. It was a sea of pointed black hats. Each of the long house tables was lined with students, their faces glimmering by the light of 1,000 candles, which were floating above the table in midair. Professor Flitwick, who was a tiny little wizard with a shock of white hair, was carrying an ancient hat and a three-legged stool out of the hall.
Oh, said Hermione softly, we've missed the sorting.
New students at Hogwarts were sorted into houses by trying on the sorting hat, which shouted out the house they were best suited to, Gryffindor, Ravenclaw, Hufflepuff, or Slytherin. Professor McGonagall strode off toward her empty seat at the staff table, and Harry and Hermione set off in the other direction, as quietly as possible toward the Gryffindor table. People looked around at them as they passed along the back of the hall, and a few of them pointed at Harry. Had the story of his collapsing in front of the Dementor traveled that fast? He and Hermione sat down on either side of Ron, who had saved them all seats.
What was that about? He muttered to Harry.
Harry started to explain in a whisper, but at that moment the headmaster stood up to speak, and he broke off. Professor Dumbledore, though very old, always gave an impression of great energy. He had several feet of long silver hair and beard, half-moon spectacles, and an extremely crooked nose. He was often described as the greatest wizard of the age, but that wasn't why Harry respected him. You couldn't help trusting Albus Dumbledore. And as Harry watched him beaming around at the students, he felt really calm for the first time since the Dementor had entered the train compartment.
"Welcome," said Dumbledore, the candlelight shimmering on his beard. "Welcome to another year of Hogwarts. I have a few things to say to all of you, and as one of them is very serious, I think I'd best get it out of the way before you come befuddled by our excellent feast."
Dumbledore cleared his throat and continued.
As you will all be aware, after their search of Hogwarts Express, our school is presently playing host to some Dementors of Azkaban, who are here on Ministry of Magic business.
He paused, and Harry remembered what Mr. Weasley had said about Dumbledore not being happy with the Dementors guarding the school.
They are stationed at every entrance to the grounds, Dumbledore continued. And while they're with us, I must make it plain that nobody is to leave school without permission. Dementors are not to be not fooled by tricks or disguises, or even invisibility cloaks, he added blandly, and Harry and Ron glanced at each other. It is not in the nature of the Dementor to understand pleading or excuses. I therefore warn each and every one of you to give them no reason to harm you. I look to the prefects and our new head boy and girl, to make sure that no student runs afoul of the Dementors, he said. Percy, who was sitting a few seats down from Harry, puffed out his chest again and stared around impressively.
Dumbledore paused again. He looked very serious around the hall, and nobody moved or made a sound.
On a happier note, he continued, I am pleased to welcome two new teachers to our ranks this year. First, Professor Lupin, who has kindly consented to fill our post of Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher.
There was some scattered, rather unenthusiastic applause. Only those who had been in the compartment on the train with Professor Lupin clapped hard, Harry among them. Professor Lupin looked rather shabby next to all the other teachers in their best robes.
Look at Snape,
Ron hissed in Harry's ear. Professor Snape, the potions master, was staring, along with the staff table, at Professor Lupin. It was common knowledge that Snape wanted the Defense Against the Dark Arts job. But even Harry, who hated Snape, was startled at the expression twisting on his thin, shallow face. It was beyond anger. It was loathing. Harry knew that expression only too well. It was the look Snape wore every time he set eyes on Harry.
And to our second new appointment, Dumbledore continued as the lukewarm applause for Professor Lupin died away. Well, I'm sorry to tell you that Professor Kettleburn, our Care of Magical Creatures teacher, retired at the end of last year in order to enjoy more time with his remaining limbs. However, I'm delighted to say that his place will be filled by none other than Rubeus Hagrid, who has agreed to take on this job in addition to his gamekeeping duties.
Harry, Ron, and Hermione stared at one another, stunned. Then they joined in with the applause, which was tumultuous at Gryffindor table in particular. Harry leaned forward to see Hagrid, who was ruby red in the face, and staring down at his enormous hands, his wide grin hidden in the tangle of his black beard.
We should have known, Ron roared, pounding the table. Who else would have assigned us a biting book?
Harry, Ron, and Hermione were the last to stop clapping. And as Professor Dumbledore started speaking again, they saw that Hagrid was wiping his eyes on the tablecloth.
Well, I think that's everything of importance, said Dumbledore. Let the feast begin.
The golden plates and goblets before them filled suddenly with food and drink. Harry, suddenly ravenous, helped himself to everything he could eat and began to eat. It was a delicious feast. The hall echoed with talk, laughter, and the clattering of knives and forks. Harry, Ron, and Hermione, however, were eager for it to finish so they could talk to Hagrid. They knew how much being a teacher would mean to him. Hagrid wasn't a fully qualified wizard. He'd been expelled from Hogwarts in his third year for a crime he had not committed. It had been Harry, Ron, and Hermione who had cleared Hagrid's name last year. At long last, when the last morsels of pumpkin tart had melted from the golden platter, Dumbledore gave the word that it was time for them all to go to bed, and they all got their chance.
Congratulations, Hagrid, Hermione squealed as they reached the teacher's table.
All done to your three, said Hagrid,
wiping his shiny face on his napkin as he looked at them.
Can't believe it. Great man, Dumbledore, came straight down to me after Professor Kettleburn said he'd had enough. It's what I always wanted.
Overcome with emotion, he buried his face in his napkin, and Professor McGonagall shooed them away. Harry, Ron, and Hermione joined the Gryffindors, streaming up the marble staircase, and now, very tired, along more corridors, up more and more stairs to the hidden entrance to Gryffindor Tower. A large portrait of a fat lady in a pink dress asked them,
Password?
Coming through, Percy called from behind the crowd. The new password's Fortuna Major.
Oh, no, said Neville Longbottom sadly. He always had trouble remembering the passwords. Through the portrait hole and across the common room, the girls and boys divided their separate staircases. Harry climbed the spiral stair with no thought in his head except how glad he was to be back. They reached the familiar circular dormitory with its 5 four-poster beds, and Harry, looking around, felt he was home at last. And that's the end of chapter 5. And next, we'll read chapter 6, called Talons and Tea Leaves.
I hope you like that, my kitten. And I already miss you so much. You're my sweet boo. I love you with all my heart. I want to curl up with you. And sleep with you. And hold you. You're my sweet kitty. Good night, Pooh.